I'm Robert Sickles, and I'm here with Catherine Frank, and this is the Cold Open Mini 32.2, the top five best films featuring Marvel Comics characters. This is the second part of our two-part podcast, the first one of which featured the top five worst movies featuring Marvel Comics characters. So we'll just jump right in, Catherine, now that we've put that out there. And again, these are all the movies that feature Marvel characters, not just Marvel movies. So there's 60 plus movies from which to choose. And I will go first because I like to give you the last word as ever. So for my number five on my list is Spider-Man 2, the 2004 Spider-Man featuring Tobey Maguire, who's by far the best Spider-Man, Kirsten Dunst, Alfred Molina as far and away the best villain in any of the Spider-Man movies. Sam Raimi directed, and all that stuff that he brought to his great low-budget Evil Dead films, it was like, what would this guy do with the budget? And he finally got the budget, and he did really amazing things. This is a visually astounding film. It's incredibly fun. I think it's of note that Michael Chabon co-wrote, and there's some of his lyricism in there. And this was a tough choice for me, and I'm sure we'll talk about this. There's so many great movies that I had to cut. It was actually way harder to pick the top five than it was the bottom five. There's so many good movies from this list. Spider-Man 1 is really, really great. The first Spider-Man. And to see it in the theater was kind of amazing. It came out in 2002. It was the first 9/11 movie, like post-9/11 movie set in New York. And it was a really big deal. And it had the upside down kiss and these kind of iconic scenes. But Spider-Man 2 is just a better movie and the best of all of the Spider-Man movies to date, I would argue. And just a great movie all around.
Yeah. So we can then go ahead and start there because Spider-Man 2 is also on my list. And I think everything you said about it is absolutely true. My favorite thing about this movie is that, and I'm sure people who have heard me talk about superheroes have heard me say this before, but the most important thing about a compelling superhero story is not the superpowers, it's not the special effects, because what makes superheroes super is like some essential character quality. Right? It's not that they're powerful, because they're all powerful. And if that was just it, they would all be the same. And so Spider-Man 2 has, I think, what is maybe still the best sort of scene or moment that encapsulates, right, kind of what is special about this character. And it is, of course, Spider-Man saving the subway train on the elevated track, right? And he's like very injured. And all the New Yorkers on the subway train protect him, right? And at one point, right, his mask comes off and they realize that he's like a teenager, basically, or a young man. And just the relationship between, right, Peter Parker or Spider-Man and the people of New York is what's key here. He is, in fact, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And that's what makes him special, is that he is really dedicated, right, to this place and to these people. And that's why he does what he does. And so this scene, like, it gets me every time, right? It's not subtle. It's perhaps a little corny, but also that seems fitting. It's Spider-Man. And yeah, I think just, right, the way that in such a brief scene, it really gets at the heart of what is important about this character is, I think, one of the things that really elevates this movie for me. And you can see the influence of this, right, in subsequent, particularly the MCU movies, where it seems like for almost all the characters, they figured out that one thing. So like Tony Stark saying, "I'm Iron Man" at the press conference, or pre-serum Steve Rogers jumping on the grenade that he doesn't know isn't real, right? Like these kinds of things where you're like, oh, that's what makes that character special.
Oh, that's fantastic, Catherine. Where is that? What number is that for you?
I had mine in chronological order, so I think it was 4, but it's 5 now.
Okay, it's 5 now. And I, more than any other character, like even though characters all have cities, whether it's like Central City or Gotham City or whatever, Spider-Man being aligned with New York is the most clear and deeply bonded character with place. Wouldn't you say?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. So my number four is Iron Man 3, the 2013 film from Marvel Studios. There are so many things to like about this. Now, one of the things we could talk about here, and this kind of goes back to Spider-Man, is importance or quality, right? So Spider-Man 1 is probably more important, right? Because it was just like this bringing to life of this Marvel character. And so too, Iron Man 1 is probably more important. Some would argue it's the start of that iteration of the MCU. I wouldn't agree, but some have argued that. But it's not nearly as good as Iron Man 3. And Iron Man 3 has so much to like about it, but it's a Shane Black film and one of the few where it was writer, he co-wrote and directed, which is unusual for the Marvel Universe. He has a very particular style, whether it's The Nice Guys or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He has a great way with dialogue. And Robert Downey Jr., as he was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, literally the film that rehabilitated him, that allowed him to become Iron Man, he delivers that Shane Black dialogue so well and so expertly. The Mandarin in his classical form is unfilmable. Like, it's just not something we would do contemporarily. So the reimagining of that character as a fictional creation, as played by Ben Kingsley, like to manipulate media, is so smart and so clever. And then the ties of this to the Warren Ellis extremist run in the comics. And I think there's shades of Matt Fraction in there as well, even though he didn't contribute to writing it. Like, his run, I think, and the way that he kind of treated the Mandarin as an idea, as much as a person, is very much kind of in this. It's just super pleasurable. It's really fun to watch. And Guy Pearce is such a magnificent ham. And you think, in like one of the common things in Hollywood is the glow up, right? But so often the glow up is a female character. And in this movie, we get to see him kind of get that. It's just a really pleasurable film from start to finish.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you say about sort of being good or being enjoyable versus like being important. I tried to kind of hit somewhere in between. Like, there were a couple where I had a really hard time. Because I was like, I might like this one a little better, but I think this one is probably more influential. So we'll go to, I guess, my number four then, which is, 1998, Stephen Norrington, Blade.
I knew you were going to pick that. I knew you were going to pick that.
Well, you know me. You know I was going to pick that. So this movie is both fun, good, and important. It's important because this is the start of it's basically the start of like an actual sort of reliable idea that you could make like a relatively large budget superhero movie. So Marvel, right? This is Marvel just post bankruptcy, basically desperate to sell off any license that they can to anyone who will make a film of anything. And so I believe this is New Line. This is also the start of, I think it would take a little bit longer, like approximately another decade for them to realize this, but that you can make a successful movie out of any character, right? It doesn't have to be the flagship, like X-Men, Fantastic Four, which as it turns out, maybe you can't make a successful movie of, we talked about that last time. But yeah, no one but the hugest comic book nerds knows who Blade is. Right? That's not a hugely popular character. However, it's a great story. And they picked, I think, really smartly, right, the most exciting stuff about it. It's vampires, it's action. I mean, Wesley Snipes, for all of his problems, I was born to play this role, right? He's so great in these. The special effects look good. Unlike a lot of other superhero movies they were trying out at this time, they still look pretty good. A lot of them are practical. And this movie also has a soundtrack that is that sort of like drum and bass, house meets hip hop, like that kind of soundtrack that we saw for the rest of the late 90s and early 2000s. The Matrix probably has the most famous one of these kinds of soundtracks, comes out the next year. But like Gangstar is on this, KRS-One, right? Like, it's surprisingly good. So yeah, I think just that mixture of elements, and again, the idea that you could do this successfully with characters that aren't that familiar, is really key. This is kind of where it really starts for me.
So this is a great segue. So my number three is Deadpool. Speaking of rated R films, the film that I kind of cut, you know, speaking of that short list, was Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a film I really love. It's the funniest of the Marvel films, I would argue, although I think the first Ant-Man is really great as well, also kind of on the short list. But in watching Guardians of the Galaxy, it would be like, what would this be like if it was rated R? And the answer is Deadpool, right? At least that kind of that approach to the humor in it. We talked in our last pod about that first iteration of Deadpool in the Wolverine X-Men Origins movie. And this is Ryan Reynolds actually reprises the role, although a different origin story, et cetera, in this. And it's hilarious from start to finish. He is a born comedian. Nobody should ever put him in a dramatic film. He's wonderful. And I really do think he's actually an underrated actor at what he does well. He does so well. And our family tradition, we always start the Christmas season off with the onslaught of Christmas stuff with Just Friends, which was the first film that he was amazing in. But he's fantastic in Deadpool. And this also rings true to the origins, the Rob Liefeld, Fabian Nicieza origin in a really pleasurable way.
That's a great choice. And I think too, right, like once you've established this sort of like idea of, oh, blockbuster superhero movies, these big franchises, then I think you can do, you know, your rated R tentpoles. Similarly to how you can build a franchise around someone who's known for having some weird behavior after that, right? Like you can build the franchises around Robert Downey Jr. in 2008 because hopefully by that point it seemed like he had cleaned up, which seems right. Let's go then to, I think, my number three. And again, these are mostly chronological. So this is going to be Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which is the Russos. This, again, I really went back and forth. I personally probably enjoy Captain America, the First Avenger more, just personally. It's the kind of story that I like. However, Winter Soldier is also great. It's very fun. And it has a few things that I think really put it over the top. One is, of course, that elevator fight scene, which was so good that they then had to do a callback to it in Endgame. But I'm a huge, we've talked about this, I think, before, even on the podcast. I'm a huge sucker for a really good, like, close quarters fight. And this is a really good one. Two, there's sort of the MCU at large doing a good job, I think, kind of starting to play around with genre, right? And that this is kind of has a lot of, like, spy thriller elements, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff happening that isn't necessarily just sort of superheroes. And also, I thought they did a really good job with this, sort of setting this up. Like, last time I talked about movies that I thought were kind of bad setups, where it's like, okay, we're just putting pieces on the table, but the movie itself was not that enjoyable. This, I think, is a good setup. Everything that happens after this, in both their films and television, depends on the events of this movie. And so I think it would have been really easy to have this be clumsy, but I think it really hangs together as a story. And it's fun to watch. And yeah, everything that comes after this sort of builds on this. But in particular, their TV show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., was frankly not that exciting before this movie. And then they really like put those pieces together well. After this movie came out, I think that show really took off and became very good. So sort of demonstrating the way that they've been able to kind of put these pieces together, direct, redirect like things so that it's working and it's enjoyable.
So my number two is Avengers Endgame. And from 2019, and I want to point out a couple things to build off of what you said. I think what is forgotten about these Marvel films, especially the later ones, is there's continuity with directors and writers. So the fact that the Russo brothers directed Avengers Endgame, as well as Winter Soldier, as well as Civil War, as well as Infinity War, and that Christopher Marcus and his writing partner, Stephen McFeely, wrote all of them, it matters. It matters in a way that we don't always see in other film franchises. There is a really serious continuity here, and it's not just because of the actors in front of the camera, it's because of a lot of the talent behind the camera working together over a period of time. I think Avengers Endgame is remarkable. I think it is a remarkable film, and it's remarkable for two reasons. It is remarkable narratively in the sense that it not only ties up most of the loose ends, or at least all the major ones, of the 21 films that preceded it, it does it in a really pleasurable, believable, tidy way. It feels complete. It feels of a piece. It feels as though it completes it all in a really wonderful way. And the other thing that I would say is I was incredibly invested emotionally. I wept like a small child when Tony Stark died. I just did. And, you know, as we talked about last time, I've watched all these films over the pandemic. And yeah, the tears are still there, Catherine, like waterworks. Like, it's just a really, like, shockingly great film. It is way better than it has any business being for, like, what it is. Although I'm tired of that delineation. Like, if you don't like comic book movies and you don't like what they've done to the industry, that's fair enough. But that in and of itself doesn't mean they're bad. And many of them aren't. Like, many of them are, as you and I have talked, going over this list, there's so many good films out of these 60 plus to choose from. So there's a real continuity. Now, you know, writing all those great films, they still also wrote The Dark World, but, you know, you can't win them all. But I just think it is a remarkable achievement in cinema, both for what it did business-wise, but also just how it wrapped up this story cycle.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely. I also like that movie a lot. And yeah, I'm definitely also, I really hate that sort of caveat. Like, oh, this is good for this kind of, like, stop it. Stop it. It's like when the Academy tried to float the idea of, like, best popular film or whatever. Stop it. Don't do this. So my number two is going to be 2018, Ryan Coogler, Black Panther. So this movie, I think, has a lot going for it. I just want to touch on a few things. One is, we talked last time about how one of the things that Marvel still seems to sometimes, or I guess often, struggle with their MCU movies is creating good, compelling, one-off villains. Well, here you go. Speaking of someone we also talked about last time, Michael B. Jordan kills it, right? Just kills it in this movie. He's fantastic. The chemistry between him and Chadwick Boseman is great. They really, like, it feels like somebody took their time, right, with trying to figure out his motivations, what would make him compelling, all this kind of thing. Just really, they nail that here in a way that they rarely do, I think, which is okay. I mean, you know, it's fine if your villain that appears once is not the most compelling, but it's better if they are, as we saw here. I also wanted to just sort of talk a little bit about, like, sense of place. One of the things that often, I think, happens in the MCU is I think it's actually not as good as, let's say, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies. at establishing like where these things are happening and making you care about sort of the connection between the characters and where they are. A lot of times in the Avengers movies, I'm like, wait, are we in New York or LA right now? What's happening? There's just not, I think, as much of a sense of place. They do it sometimes. So like the end of Avengers, right? It's really, really good at this. But I think everything they do in Black Panther, the costume design is incredible. The way they sort of build up not only what Wakanda looks like, but then also the contrast between Wakanda and Oakland is good in this movie. And like as someone who has been to Oakland many times, I was like, okay, yeah, like it doesn't look exactly sort of one-to-one, but like the feeling right is right about like what is distinct about these two places. So I just really appreciated the way that they kind of built that up. And everything in this movie looks great, right? Just visually, it's amazing. So I was super impressed by this. I think at this point, you know, I think a lot of people think it's good. I think there's also has been a bit of a backlash, like, oh, people just wanted to be excited for it. Like, no, this movie is great. And it in particular nails a lot of the things, those little things, and they're not little, they're actually very important, that the other movies I think have struggled with. So I hope that, I don't know what they're going to do with Black Panther 2, but I hope that they sort of at least stick with these things that worked really well about the first one as much as they can.
There's talk about making the Black Panther sister the new Black Panther, but I kind of want them to reincarnate Killmonger as good and have him come back as Black Panther. So we'll see. So one of the laments that you hear in kind of serious film circles is you take these people who make these really small, personal, and kind of wonderful low-budget films, and they're shown to have talent, and they get scooped up by the industry and find themselves making massive big budget franchise films. And there's probably no better recent example of that than Ryan Coogler. So it's kind of shocking, speaking of Oakland, right, to go from Fruitvale Station to Creed, which is an amazing movie, just fantastic. And then to this. So rather than lament these seemingly singular talents going to mainstream Hollywood, let's maybe celebrate it. Right. And like, if these movies are going to be made anyway, let's have some people with real vision and personality and an idea of a singular vision make these films. They're better that way. So likewise, people are saying, how can Chloe Zhao go from The Rider to Nomadland now to The Eternals? I don't know. Maybe she can. Let's see. I can't wait. I can't wait to see what she does with it. So my number one is, and I'm just, let me, the caveat real quick. I can't wait to hear what yours is, because I thought for sure it was going to be Black Panther. I thought for sure it would be Black Panther. That was on my short list, just off. So my number one is Captain America, the First Avenger. By far, I think it's the best film for reasons that we always talk about. And for me, I'll end where you started, talking about what makes somebody special. And it's not just the falling on the grenade. It's also the bringing down the flagpole by pulling the pin. It is the, I can do this all day that we get in movie after movie. And just the end, this idea that I'm going to meet you on Saturday night, the luminous Peggy Carter, for this dance that he ultimately ends up getting in Endgame. So I don't think Iron Man 1 is like the first Marvel movie of this iteration. Actually, I think this is the film, Captain America First Avenger, as the name applies, that kind of set off the most important sequence of these films. And I would also just real quickly, Joe Johnston directed this, and he has had a weird career in that he's made some really amazing films and then didn't direct for a long time and made some like odd films. But his second film that he directed was actually The Rocketeer. And there's actually some real similarity between The Rocketeer and Captain America First Avenger. And he also directed October Sky. And there is a wide-eyed innocence in the belief of like the right stuff, right? That American idea of like, of doing good things because they're good, not necessarily for any other reason than that. And boy, is that nice to see in this moment. It was great to see in 2011, but even my most recent screen of this film, which, believe it or not, was on November 3rd, I could not watch the election. I could not watch results. And I just said, what can I watch that will make me feel good about kind of where I live? So I watched Captain America, The First Avenger. And I just think it's a really, really special film. And all these elements that make these Marvel films special come together in, for me, the most pleasing way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also love that movie. And I think for me, that was the one that was probably the closest, like just off the short list, and mostly for the sake of variety. I really could have rearranged these in many ways. But yeah, that movie is fantastic. I had not put those Joe Johnson features together, but now that you say that, that 100% makes sense, right? This whole thing. Yeah, totally checks out. What a great choice. Okay, so my number one, I think probably won't surprise you once you hear me say it. This is also 2018, Bob Persichetti, Peter Ramsey, Rodney Rothman, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This movie is so good. I don't even know where to start. So first of all, I really love Miles Morales. And so I've been waiting. For a few years, I was going to conventions, and the person who was in charge of Marvel's like comics part, I probably got tired of me asking, like, hey, when are you gonna animate or put in live action Miles Morales? Like, we all want to see it. When? And I guess, you know what? It was worth waiting for, because this movie is fantastic. When I saw sort of the initial kind of talk about this movie, I was like, computer animated, like, okay, we'll see what they do. But it looks amazing. They do really cool stuff, particularly with the frame rate, to like make it look comic book-y. And they do a lot of really clever visual stuff. I love the way they show like Spidey sense. I love the way they show like the different universes look awesome. This is probably the best use of like the multiverse concept I've seen in a superhero movie. They do really compelling stuff with it. The other alternative spider people that they picked, I think they did a really great job. Spider-Gwen is awesome in this. The sad sack, like Peter Parker Spider-Man, is just amazing, just perfect. With some really fun, like the Nicolas Cage Spider-Man noir is hilarious, right? John Mulaney as Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham, is super funny. And it could have, I think, gone really goofy, but they really make it work emotionally. The soundtrack for this movie is great. Like, they really, I think, nailed, like, and we talked about this actually in one of my classes this semester, like, it's really strong in that these are absolutely the things that Miles would be listening to, right? Like, someone this age at this time, this is definitely, like, what's on, right, their Spotify. So super comes together well in that sense. And yeah, just everything about this works to me. I was so impressed by this. I went in hoping to like it, and I think this exceeded every expectation I had for this. And I think Sony makes a really good choice here in terms of what can they do to sort of distinguish what they're offering from what Marvel is offering, right? I mean, they can't match the budget. They can't use a bunch of the same characters. They can't do live action, right? There's a lot they can't do, but it seems like maybe in the opposite, again, last time we talked about like Fox doing so poorly trying to figure out how to do X-Men with all the things they can't use of recent. Well, Sony apparently, I guess, really thought about it, because I think they do a great job navigating all the restrictions they have with what they can do with this franchise. And yeah, I mean, just knocked it out of the park. I love this movie. I think for what it was and what they executed, I had to make this number one. I'm beyond excited for the next one of these. That's my number one.
Oh, that's a great choice. And it seems like the next Marvel Spider-Man is also like going to be a part of this, right? They're going to have all these old Spider-Mans and old villains, like they're all going to be in there in the live action version. So that will be pretty amazing. That's a fantastic choice. And yes, now that you've said it, totally, totally predictable. I can't believe I didn't even think of that. That was really fun, Catherine. That's great. So that is the second of our two-part series about the best and worst filmic representations of Marvel characters from the 60 plus films that have been made about them. We would love it if you would rate and subscribe to The Cold Open, which you can find on iTunes, and we'll be back soon. So I'm Robert Sickles for Catherine Frank, and this is The Cold Open Mini 32.2.